Our first speaker this afternoon is Brother Erwin Kalinske from Chicago, and he has another of our illustrated lessons for us. There are two handouts that the brethren can make use of. There are limited copies, but they're up here at the front. Brother Erwin has titled his thoughts this afternoon, Mount Musa, Moses. Mount Musa, Moses. Brother Erwin.
Thank you, Brother Randy. On behalf of my wife and myself, we'd like to tell you that we're very honored to be here and very fortunate to be here at this spiritual oasis, in keeping with our subject matter, at this spiritual oasis. Thank you for the prayer, Brother Holiday. And many individuals from Chicago wanted to send special love to you individually, but the only one that really insisted that I would not forget would be Brother Art and Barbara, Sister Barbara Jesuit. Our subject matter will be the search for the real Mount Sinai, which will be Mount Musa Jabal El Laws. We're going to move fairly fast in order to get a comprehensive view of the subject matter, so hopefully it won't be too fast for you. For our introduction, for centuries now, Bible scholars have been puzzled as to where the real Mount Sinai is located. Most individuals are unaware of the fact that not one shred of evidence has been discovered to prove what most people are unaware of is that what they call the real Mount Sinai in the Sinai Peninsula is indeed the famed Mountain of Exodus. Several proposed sites for the real Mount Sinai have been suggested by biblical scholars, but there is no archaeological evidence to support any of the claims. In fact, the only real reason at all that a mountain in the Sinai Peninsula is called Mount Sinai is because around 500 A.D., a fortune teller guessed this to be its location. Tradition is the only evidence that exists. A documentary tape on the search for the real Mount Sinai was shown in the Chicago area on the TV Discovery Channel. Brother George and Sister Florence Tabak taped the presentation and loaned us the tape. When we purchased the tape, and we were fascinated by the points of the presentation. Bob Cornick and Larry Williams made their trip to Arabia in 1988. Bob is a detective and Larry is a commodity broker. These two men received information that it's highly possible that the true Mount Sinai is in Arabia and that the name of the mountain is Jabal El Laws or Mount Musa Moses. These two men asked for permission to enter Arabia. The request was denied. They surreptitiously slipped into the country. In other words, illegally. Their fake letterhead was a possible means of saving their heads if they got caught. The video also offers some possible solutions to a mystery that has intrigued Bible readers and scholars for centuries. I concluded from the evidence shown in the video that if indeed what they reported is true, they have discovered the true Mount Sinai. My purpose in sharing what I have personally learned from my research beside the video presentation is not necessarily the point of trying to convince you that I am right. I was determined to see for myself if what the Apostle Paul meant, what he said in Galatians 4:25. Now this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. Now you'll notice that this scripture says that this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. And you'll also notice what it does not say. It does not say the Sinai Peninsula. I checked every translation that I could find, and I checked all the commentaries that I could find, and I come up with the startling conclusion from the evidence presented in the video, plus additional scriptural possibilities, which we hope to reach the startling conclusion that the real Mount Sinai, the mountain of God, is in Saudi Arabia, the ancient land of Midian. 5 lines of reasoning that I will present include 14 geographical arguments, 13 scriptural points, 1 undersea discovery, the report of the Alexandrian scholars, and the petroglyphs of the Egyptian bull. Let us begin with the 14 geographical arguments. Point number 1. Mount Sinai is in Midian. The land of Midian is the present country of Arabia. One of the boundaries of Arabia is the coastline of the Gulf of Aqaba, or the Red Sea. In Exodus 3:1, we read, "Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side, or the rear part of the wilderness, and came to Horeb, Musa, the mountain of God." There are 2 important issues here. First, Midian is in the present-day Saudi Arabia. Second, at the traditional site of Mount Sinai, there is no evidence of the backside of a desert. It is surrounded by rocky, mountainous peaks. By contrast, Mount Jebel el-Lars, located in Midian, is on the far side of a vast desert. On this map, you will notice that the red arrow indicates the land of Midian and is across the coastline of the Gulf of Aqaba and the Sinai Peninsula. And you could see, going to the right, we'll show you some pictures with mountains, there is a vast desert. Point number 2. The Gulf of Aqaba at the southern tip of Sinai is also called the Red Sea. The distance across the Gulf of the southern end would be 12 miles. The width of the Gulf is from 8 to 17 miles, and its depth is from 600 to 1,200 feet deep. In 1 Kings 9:26, we read, "King Solomon also built a fleet of ships in Ezion-Geber, which is near Elath, on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom." You will notice that the scripture states that the Red Sea is the Gulf of Aqaba, and the Amalekites lived in an area just north of the red arrow that you'll see in a few minutes. And they, the Amalekites, would attack Israel when they would enter the land of Midian. You will notice that the arrow locates the city of Elath, and the Amalekites lived above this red arrow. So it's very illogical that the Amalekites would come down all the way to the Sinai Peninsula to fight the Israelites. But when the Israelites would cross into the land of Midian, then the Amalekites would fight them, because this would be an invasion into their territory. You will notice the arrow going across, and this would be a suggestion as one of the possible locations which we will propose to be a possible site of the crossing of the Israelites. And we're also going to suggest another possible crossing site. The little pyramids that you see are suggestions by scholars as to the proposed location of Mount Sinai. Brother Ted Martin gave me a magazine on archaeology, 1988. And I thank Brother Ted very much, because you'll notice where it says the land of Midian, we do not have any little pyramids as you do on the left-hand side. Point number 3. The Bitter Lakes region is too marshy and shallow. We have many scriptures to illustrate that the Israelites crossed in deep waters. In Exodus 15:5, we read, "The deeps cover the Egyptians, and they went down to the depths like a stone." And there are many scriptures to indicate that the waters when Israel crossed were very, very deep. The Bitter Lakes region is too marshy and shallow, and this the location of the Bitter Lakes would be far up north, and as the scriptures indicate that the Israelites would cross through the wilderness before they would cross through the sea. Point number 4. There's not enough space around the traditional Mount Sinai for a camp of 2 to 3 million people. The traditional Mount Sinai, located in the Sinai Peninsula, does not have much camping space, and it would be extremely difficult to accommodate 2 to 3 million people or to fight a war with the Amalekites. On this particular map, you will notice the mountainous terrain at the southern tip of the peninsula. And it's not conceivable that 2 to 3 million people could live in this area for a full year. Point number 5, underwater land bridge. Undersea research has located the remains of an underwater land bridge at the crossing point near the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula. I would also like to suggest that there would be a landmass under the water to cross in the middle of the Gulf of Aqaba. You will notice that this is an artist's conception of a landmass underwater, and this landmass is approximately 3 feet below the water and is located at the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula. And it is 12 miles across to Midian. In Isaiah 51:10, we read, "Was it not thou who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a pathway, and for the redeemed to cross over?" And I'd also like to mention that this scripture could also apply for the middle of the Gulf of Aqaba, which we will suggest in a short time. In reprint 5640, Brother Russell has the suggestion that there would be a land mass underwater. I don't know where he got this thought, but it's in the reprints. There's enough of this land bridge remaining to illustrate the strong possibility that God made this provision long before the Exodus. The Bitter Springs of Marah. We're going to point up the fact that there are two possible locations for the Bitter Springs of Marah. Marah is a three-day journey after you cross the Red Sea. One location is approximately 45 to 90 miles from Succoth, which is up north. And we're also going to suggest that Marah could be located in the land of Midian. Point number 7. The 70 pounds or 12 springs of Elim. We will point out two possible locations for two sites when we cross the Red Sea. We believe that these two sites are in Arabia. Point number 8, the caves of Moses. No caves exist on Mount Sinai in the Sinai Peninsula, and we will shortly illustrate a cave on Mount Musa in Midian. Point number 9. The peak in the top area of Mount Musa has charred granite, not volcanic stone or ash, and is confirmed by the fact that the mountains in the land of Midian are volcanic mountains. In Exodus 19:18, we read, "Now Mount Sinai was all in smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked violently." There are volcanic mountains in the mountain range on Mount Musa in the land of Midian. And it seems that God timed the event to use natural means. And my wife always tells me that God will always use natural means before he'll use supernatural power. This will illustrate that the Sinai mountain is in the Sinai Peninsula, and it is not a volcanic mountain. The charred rock on the top of Mount Musa in Midian, which you see on the slide, is burnt granite. And it takes tremendous heat to char or to burn granite. There is melted rock and granite on Mount Musa in the land of Midian. Moses was instructed to put boundary markers around the mountain. We read in Exodus 19:23, "And Moses said to the Lord, 'The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou didst warn us, saying, Set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it.' These markers are on Mount Musa. Large boulders are spaced around the mountain at a given number of feet. The golden calf altar. In Exodus 32:1, we read, 'When Moses delayed in coming down from the mountain, the children of Israel wanted to make a golden calf.' Evidence of the petroglyphs of the Egyptian bull have been found carved in the side of Mount Musa. And petroglyphs are carvings in stone. And these were carvings of the Egyptian bull. Evidence of a huge boulder-type altar exists on Mount Musa, and this is recorded for us in Exodus 32:5. Aaron built an altar before the golden calf. It appears like this is just a mass of large stone, but the petroglyphs that are carved in this area help identify that this would be the true location of Mount Musa. There are 12 pillars of stone at the foot of the mountain that would constitute an altar. In Exodus 24:4, we read, 'And Moses built an altar at the foot of the mountain with 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel. Evidence of these 12 pillars still remain to this day at Mount Musa in Midian.' This is an actual photograph of what could be the stones of the altar. But what really makes it convincing is that the petroglyphs on the sides of the mountain are in this area. Point number 13. In order to qualify to be the true Mount Musa, we have to have a split rock with a water basin to contain water. In Exodus 17:6, we read, 'I will stand before you, and there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink.' The split rock at Horeb is a gigantic rock, or two rocks, measuring 57 feet in height. I like this particular picture because it's convincing to me, or it's a strong point to emphasize, that you will not find this type of formation on any other mountain. In the Sinai Peninsula, there are no caves. In 1 Kings 19, verse 8 and 13, 'So he, Elijah, arose and went to Horeb, the mountain of God, and stood in the entrance of the cave. Elijah knew where Mount Musa was.' There is a cave on Mount Musa in the land of Midian. The two gentlemen, Bob and Larry, saw the cave. And this is the view from the cave. And this would end our 14 geographical points. We're now going to submit 13 scriptural points. In Exodus 2:19, we read, 'So they said, An Egyptian delivered us from the land of the shepherds, And what is more, he even drew the water for us and watered the sheep. The key point that we'd like to emphasize is that Moses was very distinct from the native shepherds, while the daughters were in Midian. In Exodus 2:22, we read, "Then she, Zipporah, gave birth to a son, and he named him Gershom, for he said, 'I have been a sojourner in a foreign land.'" The key point that we'd like to emphasize is that Moses mentioned that he was a sojourner in a foreign land. If he was in the Sinai Peninsula, this would not be a foreign land, because the Sinai Peninsula was under the jurisdiction of Egypt. In Exodus 13:18, we read, "Hence God led the people around by the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea, and the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt." The key point that we'd like to emphasize is that Israel went through the wilderness first before they came to the Red Sea. And this process is repeated in Scripture. In Isaiah 51:10, we read, "Was it not thou who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a pathway for the redeemed to cross over?" Some scholars say that the Red Sea refers to the Sea of Reeds, but this scripture says that the Red Sea is the great deep. You'll notice that this is a picture of Moses by the burning bush, and the scripture is Exodus 3:12. "And he," God said, "certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you, that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain." This was recorded for us in Exodus 3:12, and we'd also like to suggest Exodus 3:1-4. And this would emphasize the fact that the burning bush was in Midian at the Mount Horeb, or Mount Musa. So the key point that we would like to emphasize is that Moses was instructed to take off his shoes and so forth, and God talked to him at the burning bush, which was in Midian. So we'd like to recap of Midian. Point number one, Moses fled to Midian. Two, he helped Jethro's daughters water the sheep in Midian. Three, he married Zipporah and lived in Midian. Four, God called Moses at the burning bush, which would be at Mount Horeb in Midian, or it would be called Mount Musa. Point number five, bring Israel to this Musa mountain in Midian. In Exodus 16:1, we read, "Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregations of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt." The key point that we are going to emphasize, it took 30 days for Israel to reach Elim, and then also to depart for another 30 days before they would reach Mount Sinai. On this map, what we're going to suggest from the upper part of the map, which would be Egypt on the left, we are going to illustrate that it is possible for Israel to reach the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula and be ready to cross into the land of Midian. You will notice that the red line will indicate that within 30 days the children of Israel could be in the land of Midian, and that would count 27 days when they crossed the Red Sea and 3 days to get to Marah. And we'll illustrate this very shortly. What we'd like to do now is show you this map, which will follow. And we believe that Israel traveled 27 days, or 24 days or 27 days, to get to Marah. And this would be in the land of Midian. You will notice on this map that there are two arrows. And these two arrows would suggest two possible locations for Mara. The Mara up north would be approximately 90 miles from wherever they could cross the Red Sea, but we believe that the true Mara would be in the land of Midian. And if you look very carefully in the land of Midian, you will notice that you have two long mountain ranges, and then you have the vast desert that would be to the right. And that would be a requirement that Mount Musa would have a vast desert to the right of the two chains of mountains that you see. The key point that we're going to emphasize is that the Sinai Peninsula was considered part of Egypt. And Egypt's gold and silver mines were in the Sinai Peninsula. I would like to update that and just say that it would be Egypt's mineral mines that were found in the Sinai Peninsula, because it's possible that the Israelites may have imported quite a bit of silver and gold from other countries. And God said that once you cross the Red Sea, they would see the Egyptians no more. So if Israel crossed up north, they would have seen the Egyptians at the mines as they traveled south. We have a quote from a scholar who wrote a little bit about the Exodus, and his name is Robert L. Kate. Many scholars admit that the exact locations of many cities and key locations are unknown. Any of the traditional identifications is tentative and unproven. In Exodus 17:8, we read, "Then Amalek came and fought Israel at Rephidim." The key point that we'd like to emphasize is that the Amalekites attacked Israel because Israel invaded the Midian territory once they crossed the Red Sea and left the Sinai Peninsula. A key question before us would be, how long did Pharaoh grieve for his firstborn son? In Genesis chapter 50, verses 2 and 3, we read, "And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. Now 40 days were required for it, for such is the period required for the embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days. So the key question before us would be, how long did Pharaoh grieve for his firstborn? And we're going to suggest that it was more than just a few days, probably about 3 weeks. Another key question before us would be, did the Israelites have enough time to reach the Red Sea at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula before Pharaoh ended his mourning and pursued them with his chariots? We're going to suggest Israel's travel itinerary. Biblical historians suggest that the Bedouins traveled with their flocks 10 to 15 miles per day, and using the 10 miles per day, which would be the lower of our range, from Succoth to Mara would be approximately 90 miles. From Mara to Sinai would be 100 miles. And from Sinai to the seacoast would be 50 miles. So within 24 days, it's possible, with a plus or minus thrown in here, that Israel could reach the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula. So what we are suggesting, if you follow the red arrow, it is possible for Israel to reach the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula within 24 days. Another key question that we would like to answer, did the Israelites have enough time to reach the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula before Pharaoh ended his mourning and pursued them with his chariots? The answer is yes, because if we would even count up to 27 days for travel time, they would be at the point where they could cross the Red Sea. And this would also answer Exodus 16:1, that within 30 days, Israel would be in Elam. But it's very difficult to determine where Elam would be. Now what we're going to do is we're going to suggest Pharaoh's travel itinerary. Biblical historians suggest that Pharaoh's chariots and cavalry could travel 60 miles per day. And allowing one day for mobilization, we have the same figures. Succoth to Marah would be 90, Marah to Sinai 100, and Sinai to the seacoast would be 50 miles. So within 5 days, Pharaoh could arrive at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, and that would be one day before the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. So the angel of the Lord, instead of being in front of Israel with the cloud and the fire, he went in back. So he held the Egyptians off so they would not be able to attack the Israelites. The underland discovery or land bridge would be that it's possible that if they crossed to this area, they could have crossed on the land bridge, which would be 3 feet below water. We're going to suggest what we have some artifacts that are undersea, and this would be our undersea discovery. They have found 4-spoke chariot wheels, 4-spoke gold chariot wheels, which we believe belong to the high priest, because the high priest of the Egyptians always went to war with the Egyptians. And then we have an 8-spoke wheel, and we also have parts of chariot cabs that are found in the water, which we hope to show you the chariot wheels in just a short time. All of these wheels were found in the Gulf of Aqaba in 1978, but they were found toward the middle of the Gulf of Aqaba. You will notice the two arrows which are pointing to the Gulf of Aqaba. I would favor that the Israelites crossed in the middle of this Gulf of Aqaba. At first, when I was reading all of the research material, I thought that they crossed at the bottom. But I think there's more evidence, and certain key questions were answered whereby I could see now that I really favor that they crossed in the middle of the Gulf of Aqaba. And there would be a landmass underwater where you see the two arrows, but this landmass would be much deeper than the 3 feet that you saw at the southern tip. And this would be the area where the chariot wheels were found, and also they have found other artifacts that would belong to the Egyptians. And shortly we're going to show you the Nuwaiba beach, which it would be very easy for 2 to 3 billion people to cross at one time. And one gentleman who was a mathematician figured out that 2 million people could cross where you see the two blue arrows, that they could cross within 7 hours. Within 7 hours, 2 million people could cross to the other side. And to the point where you see those two blue arrows would be approximately 210 miles from Succoth. On this map, I believe that this would be the true path that the Israelites took. All of the historians agree that the Israelites gathered at Succoth, and they all agree that this is one location that seems to be very clear to identify. They would travel 190 miles, and then they would come to a turn. Excuse me, I was blocking the other light. It would be 190 miles to this particular point, and then they would travel 18 miles south on this wadi. And these instructions by God that they should turn was really an amazing turn of events. The Israelites were stunned that they were going to travel south rather than north. And the Lord ordered that they would turn south. So this information was relayed to Pharaoh, either by horseback or by reflected light that could be transferred from the mountaintops. And when Pharaoh realized that the Israelites were turning south, he realized that they were lost. And that Rotherham says, he uses the word entrenched, that the Israelites were entrenched. This would be the Wadi water, and this would be 18 miles long, and the Israelites would travel along this path, and they would come to the Nuwaiba beach. And Brother Kyle Hackensick traveled along this route, and now he said this has been turned into a highway. It's very scenic and also very beautiful. And this would be the Nuwaiba beach, where we believe the Israelites crossed in the middle of the Gulf of Aqaba. And you will notice that on this picture, you sort of have to picture in your minds a little bit, that to the north, the mountains went right into the sea, so you couldn't escape that way. And to the southern end, they had the same type of mountains, and they also had a fort, which was called Faya Harath. So we read that this would be the true location of Faya Harath. You have to use your imagination just a little bit on this particular picture. But this is a chariot wheel underwater that is covered with carbuncle. And this would be an enhanced view of a chariot wheel underwater. And this is an 8-spoke wheel. The amount of spokes in the wheel would determine the historical time of the events of whatever took place. And this is a picture of a chariot wheel, and you'll notice that the axis is going straight down into the ground. And this is a 4-spoke chariot wheel, which was found underwater. And I'd like to mention that when God would defeat the Egyptians and destroy all their chariots and all the wheels and everything that went with it, that this would be for the glory of God. And this would be a strong point that no one will ever be able to oppose the Lord. And for our Alexander scholars who confirmed that Mount Sinai is in Arabia, we have Philo, who would be a first century Jewish philosopher. We have Demetrius, who would be a third century chronographer, and Eratosthenes and Agatharsides, who are geographers, Origen, Eusebius, Jerome, and also the Old Testament translation of the Septuagint would support it. And for modern scholars, we would have Frank Moore Cross, who is from Harvard University. He's a retired professor. And I'd also add the man of Ron Wyatt and whose two sons, who were instrumental in helping find the chariot wheels. The petroglyphs of the Egyptian bull. This is just a suggestion. The images of the bulls were not created by native Midianites. The bull was a very prevalent symbol of strength in Babylon and Egypt. And the petroglyphs of the bulls on the caves would be drawn or carved in by proselytes who would be Egyptians who came along with the Israelites to Midian. So we believe that they created these particular drawings. We would like to come to the reasonable conclusion. One, the real Mount Sinai is Mount Musa, Jebel el-Laws in Saudi Arabia. I would like to thank Brother Joe Migas and Brother Ernie Kinsley and my wife, who are computer-oriented and expertise and so forth. I'm a second-year computer apprentice, so I'm very thankful for their part in helping promote this program. And also, there are two sheets for a handout, and I'm glad that Brother Luke noticed that on one of the sheets, there's a mistake. If you notice on the right side, it should be Mount Musa, not Mount Sinai. And may the Lord bless these considerations.